Oh, we're getting the thumbs up.
We're getting the thumbs up already?
Oh, man. We're getting more and more surprised by the thumbs ups.
All right, boys and girls, and whoever else in other categories, because we're talking about James Tallarico, better known as James Tallafrico by some.
Yeah.
It's now the Ken Paxton versus Tallarico race. And boy, these choices.
It's got heretics and hypocrites. That's what we got here.
Oh, so, yeah. A little H&H.
Yeah.
I like that alliteration.
A little too much, maybe.
the hypocrisy is that Ken Paxton portrays himself as a social conservative, but
yeah,
has some
conservative
moral,
Christian
moral failings.
His wife alleges a long list of.
Well, we don't care what women have to say here.
Sure. So well, you know, I'm just to... you know, for the audience, just a little background.
Okay.
You know,
fair enough.
Weight it how you will.
And Tallarico, man of the cloth. He's not really. I thought he was a minister or something at one point.
He's a seminarian, so he's studying to be a Presbyterian pastor
in some version of Christianity that's not valid.
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, yeah. No, Presbyterianism is fine. You know, you're part of the team, but I guess he's on the like liberal end of Presbyterianism, and then as we've talked about on the show, dabbles with some pretty explicit heresies. Like there's that clip going around of him like citing like the Gnostic Gospels excluded from the Bible. And it's like, okay, well,
that's straight up heresy.
It really is, right? Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know how you really get away with that.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, everything in the Gospels is about how gay marriage and abortion are, you know, the highest Christian good. So,
I mean, it's true that the Bible doesn't specifically mention abortion. It's just that religious people think abortion is akin to murder.
Yeah. So and I mean, just... the Didache, you know, one of the first like Christian writings, you know, like an early form of the catechism, you know, explicitly condemns abortion. And I mean, you know, you have to, this gets a little technical. We're getting really technical really quickly, but, you're committing a Christological fallacy. If, you say like, you know, you justify abortion by saying, well, at some point it's not a human being, right? Because of course Christ is both, you know, man and God equal two natures in one body, right?
Man and God, not woman and God.
Human and God. Yes. How about that?
Okay.
All right, Ken Paxton. To say that at some point his physical body was less human and more God, right? You know what I mean? So it's like he's all fully human from conception.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where you'd get the idea that humans are human from conception. Right?
So we don't like either of these people. Who should we bully first?
Yeah, I'm hoping that this gets litigated in the Texas Senate. let's start with Ken Paxton, because we haven't talked about him too much on the show.
So Republican primary voters in Texas had the choice of an incumbent senator who would win re-election easily.
Yep.
Who
old hand, standard conservative guy. Yeah.
And another guy, Ken Paxton, who has some personal baggage, whatever, I don't care about, but also corruption charges and was like... The Republican legislature tried to get rid of him because he's so awful.
He was impeached, by the Republican led House. Came to a settlement over corruption charges.
Real son of a bitch.
Yeah.
So that was the choice.
Yeah.
And Republican primary voters said, that's our guy.
That's who we want to risk
our
it on.
Guy.
Yeah.
And Trump put his fingers on the scale.
Pretty late in the game.
But that's because Paxton was just going to win, and Trump likes to take credit for things.
Yep.
So it's not like Cornyn was winning, and then he came in. I think Cornyn looked like he was going to lose either way. It was a blowout, as predicted. I predicted. I said, they're like, oh, yeah, it's going to be rough for Cornyn with this Trump endorsement against him. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
He's dead.
Yeah.
He is so dead. He'll lose by a million points.
Yeah.
And he lost by... exactly a million points.
What do you attribute?
So add that up.
Yeah. I mean, it was, the margins was like 65-35. So it's pretty embarrassing.
If you get tarred and feathered as like disloyal to Trump or not true Republican, the other guy, it's almost the allegations of corruption are almost as evident, because of course they're coming after him. Because it's that Trump quote, they're not really after me, they're after you, I'm just in the way. So of course a bunch of rhino sellout Republicans tried to get me on bullshit corruption charges. That's because I'm standing up for you.
Yeah.
The people.
There we
Gotham
go.
Is yours.
Yeah.
It's not really a Bane situation, but I couldn't resist.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. And Republican primary voters and Democratic primary voters. Primary voters are just lunatics.
Yeah.
It's people who, I mean, it's boomers. We're going to get into that in a little bit. Nancy Mace catering to them. Mm-hmm. And they'll lower their property taxes to nothing. Yeah. So the only ones that are going to pay taxes are you and me?
Yeah,
what
right.
the frick,
yeah.
Nancy?
Well, okay, let's get back to that. We'll get back to that.
So they pick this man who, you know what? Will probably still win because it's Texas. Not a sure thing. And honestly, Cornyn and it was like over a little exaggerated the difference between the two of them in terms of the electability argument.
Yeah.
Because it was like point something, like less than one percentage point in polls against Tallarico between Cornyn. Cornyn does like 0.5% better or something than. Mm-hmm. Than Paxton. Now that could matter because the it was only 2 points that Beto O'Rourke lost to Ted Cruz, and this is the worst environment for Republicans. So it could be that exact margin, frankly.
Yeah,
wouldn't put it past the showrunners to make it happen like that. But the point is that Republican primary voters do not care about the electability argument. If your argument against the other guy is I'm the one who's more likely to win in the general election,
that's just proof of you being a sellout.
They throw that out. Mm-hmm. They're like, don't care.
Yeah,
don't care.
It's like hipsters, you know, they who like want the band to be unpopular.
Exactly.
And unlistenable.
Oh my god, that's so good. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it's like. So
use that for one of your other media properties.
I will. Yeah. I will recycle that joke.
Excellent. Yeah. 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 I mean, I guess the one thing I guess give GOP like primary voters their due on is like Cornyn is an old man and
they put him out to pasture.
Yeah. He's not like Dianne Feinstein levels in her late days, which was just an embarrassing spectacle for all concerned. But I mean, he's been in the Senate since what, 2002 or I can't remember when he was first elected, but it's been a long time.
Yeah. He looks in less rough shape than many of them, but.
He does. He's got that strong jaw, you know, that kind of holds it together.
Yeah.
But full head
of white hair.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Snow White.
Yeah.
It's impressive. He looks like a Republican senator should look.
From central casting.
Yes, absolutely.
But from a Southwest state.
Right. But it's not enough. We got to have the other central casting character, the 10-gallon hat, you know, shoot my gun in the air after I get off on all these charges.
He's not a frothing, oozing black pile of hate and malice.
would you like distinguished right. accomplished senator or hate pile? Or would you rather vote for
like
the liberal
a primordial creature that has accidentally and wrongly transversed the boundaries between the liminal space?
I like what the Venom substance has to say.
And the Venom says, I will consume you. Like, thank you. That's our candidate. Thank you.
That's the kind of guy I could consume a beer with.
So
it is remarkable because Cornyn in Texas, the system is you have a first election. If no one gets 50% of the vote, then you have a runoff election, right? And he won that first election, and then the third candidate dropped out.
Did he win?
Yeah, he did.
He didn't get third.
He didn't get 50% of the vote, but he did. He was the leader. And so you think a lot of the third candidate support, like just the shift was, he basically lost, all of that must have gone to Paxton, plus some of the people who voted for him
also,
in the initial election.
And that goes to say, by the way, it was not even a binary choice initially for primary voters between Paxton and Cornyn.
Yeah.
There was a third guy, Hunt, mm-hmm. who is perfect, like very conservative, very MAGA, Ken Paxton's exact policy prescriptions with none of his baggage.
Yeah.
So if you're like, Cornyn has somehow betrayed Trump, we got to toss him out. You actually had a choice other than Ken Paxton.
Right,
so
right.
you can't even say, you know, other than, again, the primordial ooze. But,
yeah. I mean, the H.L. Mencken quote just gets more and more true every day, which is like, democracy is the system that, you know, thinks that people should, you know, deserve what they want and get it good and hard or whatever, right?
Well, on the Democratic side, they're getting what they want, not hard, but limply and prancily.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all these, because he's a little milquetoast, a little soft-spoken,
Well, he's got a he's got kind of a deep voice. I'm always kind of surprised when I hear him talking. But yeah.
Well, you can't hear him from behind the COVID mask.
Yeah, right.
And if he could take those that vegan replacement meat out of his mouth for 2 seconds, maybe we'd be able to understand him better.
Yeah, so this is, yeah, who's the real winner of the Texas primary? Allegedly, it's James Tallarico, because he now has to run against a much more flawed candidate.
You were down there, I think, giving Tallarico some campaign advice, right? You were saying that more COVID masks.
Yeah, right.
You were giving him advice. You were saying that he should probably like stage the musical Hamilton to drum up some support.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe an all black female Hamilton production where the black females play the male roles as well.
Yes, yep, absolutely.
And let's have Lupita Nyong'o play King George?
Yep. No, George Washington.
And George Washington.
Well, both. It'll be a one-woman show.
We're going to read Lupita Nyong'o.
James Tallarico for a campaign ad is going to remake the musical 1776, starring exclusively black and gender non-binary actors.
Gender non-conforming.
Yeah. To show that he's a patriot who can reach across the aisle.
This is good. Yeah. Well, that was really constructive advice. I'm glad you were able to help.
Texas is going to go blue, you know? But the like light blue shade that's on the trans flag, it's going to go that shade blue, yeah.
Oh, no.
I wrote a column. So after, we can get all into his background if we want, but immediately after Ken Paxton won, James Tallarico, he issues a tweet, which is like, you know, there's room for Cornyn supporters in my campaign. And everyone, you know, on Twitter's like, wow, what a smart politician. This is how you win elections. This guy knows what he's doing. And that, so this pissed me off in two ways. The first one is like, you would have to be the dumbest politician in the world to not like make any conciliatory outreach to disaffected members of the other party. Like, duh.
Yeah.
Right. So this is not him being a genius. It's
true.
Just him
although it's something no Republican has ever done. Again, the venomous ooze.
Right? I will eat you if you come my way.
Yeah. Okay. So the Republicans have failed this standard, but it's, you know, back in the good old days, this is like some pretty basic bitch politicking, right?
Sure.
So that irritated me. The other thing that irritated me is Democrats have a real problem with this. They're trying to stop people voting for the black ooze, right?
Right.
It's going to ruin the Republic. But they basically offer them nothing other than, you know, the black ooze is bad, right? So this is like, this was supposed to be, people are treating this, Tallarico's, you know, Cornyn supporters have a place in my campaign, as like some sort of conciliatory gesture, you know.
It's the thinnest, most
because
vapid.
You're not changing anything about your own policies. You're not offering, if you're trying to build a bigger tent, you're not offering people any reason to come over other than just like their own candidate is a, you know, pile
like,
of
imagine
booze,
if Tallarico was like actually socially moderate, or what if he was a pro-life Democrat? There used to be such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if he's, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's late, too late in the game to like switch all your political positions. I mean, that's what happened with Kamala Harris, and that didn't do her any good. But yeah, I mean, Joe Biden tried to pull the exact same stunt when he was still running in 2024, where he had that big speech at Independence Hall being like, you know, we're in a war against the extreme mega Republicans, right? But so he wants moderate Republicans to vote for him because they recognize Trump's flaws, but you're also running the most left-wing administration in the past half century.
Right.
And so basically you're not saying that you want Republicans at the table in order to stop Trump. What you're saying is like they just need to submit. You're using, you know, their flawed candidate as license to do whatever the hell you want, and they still have a responsibility to vote for you. It's insulting. It's insulting.
Tallarico did concede that the things he's been brutally mocked for saying, God is non-binary, all that stuff, you know, he really did wear a COVID mask at a campaign event talking about how they were going to go vegan in 2022.
Yeah, that's out of control.
I'm out there.
Yeah,
can't support that. He was in an interview, we can play it, where he says that he regrets some of the things he said. Let's play it.
So they're running a handful of highlights of things you've said in the past, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to respond or clarify. In 2021, in a speech during debate over transgender issues, you said God is non-binary. What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, I think I was being intentionally provocative with that statement. But what it means is that God can't be defined by human categories. The Apostle Paul, in his letter to the Galatians, says that in Christ there is neither male nor female. I'm always going to stand up for Texans who are being picked on by the most powerful, most corrupt politicians in the country. And I'm going to continue doing that in this race and hopefully in the U.S. Senate.
You call it intentionally provocative. Do you regret describing it that way or talking about God that way?
There are some statements that I've made that I certainly regret. There are statements that I've made where I've missed the mark. I'll be the first to admit that. But Ken Paxton is intentionally clipping my cringy comments to distract from his career of corruption. Ken Paxton has a criminal record. I have a legislative record. I've served for 4 terms in the Texas House of Representatives, where I brought Democrats and independents together to actually make progress for people. I've brought Republican legislators and Democratic legislators together to cut property taxes, to raise teacher pay, to lower the cost of housing and childcare and prescription drugs. I've passed more than 60 bipartisan bills as a legislator. I've also called out the extremes in both parties, on the left and the right. I have called out Ken Paxton for his blatant corruption, but I also called out President Biden for failing to secure our southern border. So,
and I want to get to the border in a second. Let me run one more by you, because again, the president, other Republicans are already bringing it up. Again, in 2021, though, while debating a bill that restricted transgender student athletes, you said modern science acknowledges 6 biological variations based on chromosomes to argue that sex is a nuanced spectrum, not a strict binary. Do you still believe there are 6 biological sexes?
I know there are 2 sexes, men and women. I also know there's a very small percentage of people who have these chromosomal abnormalities, and I believe they deserve to be treated with dignity and respect.
The other one they keep harping on, and it's perhaps the most curious of all, they say you're a vegan.
I'm not a vegan. I'm an 8th-generation Texan. I've been eating barbecue since before Ken Paxton's first indictment, and this campaign basically runs on Texas barbecue. If all they have is lying about me being a vegan, I feel pretty good about our chances this November.
So in that interview, he acknowledges they were cringy comments, even though he's kind of attacking Ken Paxton. That goes to show you that, I mean, we know this already, but woke era, RIP, 2014 to 2024, done.
Yeah.
With a real peak from, you know, Me Too and then Black Lives Matter and COVID in like a 2018 to 2022 period.
Yeah.
Now it's dead and done, and politicians are running from their they-thems and all those annoying cultural signifiers from that period in time.
Kneeling with the African colors, like all the congressmen did, which is so, I mean, it was cringe to us at the time, and it's so embarrassing in retrospect.
However, I will say it's gone a little cringe in the other direction. We've said this before, that a certain amount of coarseness is good because it's real, it's emotion. Just being insulting and mean-spirited relentlessly at all times, even in an insincere way, is I find it annoying. I don't I wouldn't want, if I had like young kids, I wouldn't want them to read politicians' tweets,
right?
Because they're using
childish itself.
It is itself childish. Yeah. And there was a good example of, frankly, how they're treating Tallarico. There's like all these like, look how you're standing. Like, it's, what is this, junior high?
Right.
You're making fun of the in, you know, emotionally most developed kid or something.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Stephen Miller was, oh, we have a transgender candidate.
Yeah. It's pretty, it's very unbecoming.
Well, and then, and then it goes further. So then the Democrats account responded to Stephen Miller. It was like,
shut the
fuck up, you ugly fascist or something.
Which is a bad look for themselves, you know, take the high road.
I mean, fine. Yeah. But then Katie Miller, wife of Stephen Miller, is like, how dare you criticize my husband? This just shows who the Democrats are. And this is inviting violence on him.
Oh, well, did you see her follow-up tweet? Where she outs the person
and then
running
she outs the person, and says
that they're a 30-year-old unmarried liberal, you know, what a unhappy and, you know, spiteful
this
person.
This staffer is a perfectly normal looking
She's quite pretty.
Conventionally attractive woman.
Who is also getting married. She posts a picture in her wedding dress. Yeah.
Well, like, we need to go back to some really basic rules. I've said this a couple times today already. If you can't take it, then don't dish it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to start saying that all the Democrats or all my political enemies are ugly freaks, they're probably gay, then if somebody's going to come at you and say, well, you're not so doing so well yourself, Baldy, you can't be, oh, how dare you, the crushing of our politics, I'm so angry about it, I'm sending my wife after you.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up, the pair of you. Shut up.
It's so cynical. Stephen Miller is particularly bad about this, where he will denounce, you know, anyone left of center as like a literal terrorist.
Right.
And then say that we, you know, we need to crack down on people calling him a fascist, like legally crack down on them because it's a tantamount to a death threat, which is just so, it's so pathetic. And it's so, it's just like cynically authoritarian.
Right.
It's like, so your free speech standard is you get to say whatever you want. And if I object, then I get thrown in prison. Like, that guy's honestly just a Nazi, right?
I don't like it. Don't like it at all.
Yeah.
If you're in the game, you can say what you want or just don't behave that way.
Yeah.
But you can't. It's just a crazy double standard all over the place. It was it was better when people just did not go to this level of assholeness in public about politics.
Yes. Agreed.
Let's keep it. Let's talk about the policy.
And the thing is, it doesn't get people what they want. Because I think what everyone, Trump worked as an insulting, like, awful
it's
candidate.
It's funny when he does
It's funny when
it's
he does
it. It's just funny. It's different.
Okay, so it's funny when he does it, and at least when he started, it was extra funny because he's playing off people who still feel bound by conventional rules or who absolutely failed to descend to his level, right? Like Marco Rubio's barbs about Trump University were just pathetic, right?
Yes.
But Trump can just destroy it. I mean, I hate to say this because he is like the last good politician at the federal level, but that bit in the debate where Rand Paul is going after Donald Trump for, you know, he's acting like an eighth grader, you know, making fun of people's appearances, and Donald Trump is like, let me be clear, I've never made fun of Rand's appearance, even though there's a lot of material. It's just like,
he has a natural comic timing.
Mm-hmm.
He does this well, and it's not as funny when other people are not as funny as they think they are. Politicians, especially. Someone that Senator Kennedy is hilarious. That guy is hilarious. It's you know, the
voice,
country
the accent,
fried delivery. Yeah. It's hilarious. It's good. I'm sure there are funny Democrats too. I can't think of one
Jasmine
right now.
Crockett.
No, actually, that's a good example. Yeah, she is
hilarious.
Kind of funny.
Yeah. It's bad to call, you know, your opponent in a wheelchair Hot Wheels, but that's also kind of funny.
But she's a personality. So, yeah, anyway.
It's so tough because you have just this extreme ugliness on one side and then just like the most annoying cringe politics and also very like hardline progressive politics from Tellerico on the other.
Right.
And you can't criticize one without seemingly endorsing the other. I mean, this is why the two-party system is bad and ill serves us.
It's so bad because, there's nothing to do. And that's why ultimately it will be the same. It'll be close to the same if Cornyn was the candidate.
Yeah.
Because what do you do if you're a Republican who, like, doesn't want Ken Paxton or wants to register some disapproval with Paxton? There's really nothing you can do.
Yeah.
Because anything but voting for Ken Paxton helps bring the Democrats closer to control of the Senate, where they will thwart the agenda you want and enact a different agenda.
Yeah, and it'll be all winner take all. I mean, that's the other thing that I found so frustrating about his alleged olive branch to Republicans, James Tellerico, is this is just, you know, you want to bring people over to your side, but like you're still very committed to a winner take all politics once you're elected. And so No one is going to abandon the slime ball to vote for you because you're not really offering them anything. Like, if you want to exclude the slime balls, you have to moderate, right? If you want people to moderate their own policy goals in order to elect someone with a little better, like, personal caliber of a candidate, then you have to do the same. And that's not happening. And so it's just going to keep getting worse.
Trump is himself the only one who is close, at all close to being actually transactional about politics.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, RFK Jr. actually was a case of this working where he didn't want RFK Jr. to stay in the race.
Yeah.
What do you want? You want to be in the cabinet?
Yeah.
Okay, you're out. You're in the cabinet. We're going to kind of do some of your agenda a little bit. I wouldn't have done it otherwise. I don't care about these things.
Yeah.
These are heretical to Republican things, but we'll do it a little bit and you can be in the cabinet.
Yeah.
Tulsi gets to be in the cabinet, etc. Mm-hmm. He actually does do that. Mm-hmm. But no, but if, generally speaking, what can you do?
Yeah.
If mm-hmm. you, but support your side because of this stupid system.
Yeah.
There's no, I mean, there's but no viable third parties because the system doesn't let there be a third party.
Yeah, but also people don't want it, right?
Well, people, there's no way to express a desire for it.
Yeah.
There's no, you're not doing ranked choice voting. You're not doing, Libertarian Party can get 3% of the vote and still have, it doesn't have 3% of the representation. It is zero.
Yeah.
It has, you have to get the majority of the vote in some election somewhere.
Yeah.
It's, this is unlike, you know, in the UK, if your party gets 3% of the vote, you're getting 3% of the seats in the legislature or something like that.
Well, no,
it's a little
that's,
more complicated.
Not in the UK, but other countries do have proportional representation. So, yeah. The UK is a weird, because, I mean, they have basically, you know, how we elect our congressmen, they elect their members of parliament.
Right.
And it's so strange where, like, we always have these fights of, like, oh, the Republicans got, you know, 47% of the vote, but then now have a slim majority in the Congress, and this is, you know,
right.
gerrymandering, you know.
But they elect their speaker, so they can, Prime Minister, yeah, so they can form a coalition.
So they form coalitions, too. But my point was, like, you know, Labor has a huge majority in parliament right now, but they got like 35% of the vote because they have an actual multi-party system. It's just split across districts. And so you can, you skate in, you know, you get a big majority with 30% of the vote, 35, right? And that's like a huge win. Or then on the flip side, you know, an insurgent party gets shut out even though they get 15, 20% of the vote, right?
Sure.
So it's difficult.
But you have to make compromises with the other party. You have to,
right.
Okay, we'll do part of my agenda and mm-hmm. part of your agenda.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everyone's in the cabinet.
Which would benefit mm-hmm. people like a Libertarian Party to mm-hmm. be like, okay, well, you're going to support our, even if it's a very mm-hmm. small party mm-hmm. that has some national representation in this kind of system, you'd say, okay, well, you get these things for supporting the rest of our agenda.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sure.
And that would be bad in some ways, but better than just having no influence over
right,
just because
right.
it's got to be Republican agenda or Democratic agenda.
No, and I mean, as you mentioned, like this kind of coalition building does kind of happen on the in the executive branch, right? It's like, mm-hmm. okay, I have to staff up this gigantic administration. I won with, you know, the party itself is kind of a big coalition. So I got to give everyone a little bit of what they want.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of that there, but like within Congress itself, no, there's none. It's all just winner take all. Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
And that can be even bad for us, too, because when they're like, OK, we got to staff the Federal Trade Commission with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who's a you know, who's someone who's nominally Republican and really fired up about antitrust is going to be someone we don't like.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Not good.
Not good.
Well, I don't know. He might. We'll see what happens. We'll see.
But yeah, there's no upside here.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, but doesn't matter at all. I mean, it matters hugely to them.
I guess I'm still committed.
They got to get 4 seats to have the majority.
Democrats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're going to get North Carolina.
They just had some.
They're getting that one. I don't think they'll get Ohio.
They had some really good polling in Maine just recently. So Plattner might actually pull it off. So, but these are Maine, you know, defeating Susan Collins and Texas going blue, these are like the Lucy football mm-hmm. races in politics, right? Where it's like, it seems like it might happen, and then that possibility is yanked away.
Somebody observed it. It might have been Dave Weigel. I can't remember who said this on X, but if Democrats could somehow switch Graham Plantner to Texas and James Tallarico to Maine,
they would actually
slam dunk the ball.
Right. I guess you would have to. There's not oyster farming in Texas. I don't know how they'd respond to that. You know, that's like the vegan food of the sea, right?
Yeah.
Might as well eat a sea cucumber.
I love oysters.
They're great. Yeah, they're excellent.
No, aren't Rocky Mountain oysters? Have you heard that term?
Yeah, it's bull testicles.
Yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm. I live in Idaho.
Yeah. Speaking of interesting political figures.
Okay.
Nancy Mace.
Yeah.
God darn it.
She is running the ultimate, I hate this term, but sloppulism campaign.
Sloppulism,
right?
Yes.
Boomer populism is that is her appeal right now.
Yes.
Because she said we're going to
no property taxes for senior citizens.
Yeah. You have accumulated a huge amount of wealth because you're sitting on some valuable land. You shouldn't have to pay any taxes on it.
You're the one using all the services that the taxes pay for,
right.
Which is by and large medical care.
Yeah.
Right. The major category of spending in the U.S. government,
aside
from defense and such, is medical care.
Yeah.
It costs an extraordinary amount of money.
Yeah.
It's all old people using it.
Yeah.
Not only so. Our taxes are paying for it, mm-hmm. and now she doesn't want them to have to pay taxes. It should be either okay, no taxes, but then with the vast fortunes you've accumulated for your working lives,
you have to spend
your own money to pay for your medical care until you can and you're done.
Yep.
We don't like that. So we do a system where no, we pay your medical, no matter what it is, for as long as you are alive.
Yep.
But then you have to be paying taxes too.
Yep.
It's just robbery then. It's like you will derive all the benefits and someone else, younger people, will pay for it. That is total boomer luxury communism.
So let me try to break this down a little bit. Because I think, there is one case you can make for giving seniors a break on property taxes, right? So property taxes is basically what funds the vast majority of local government in America. Yeah. It depends, localities, whatever. But you're paying for the roads, you're paying for the parks, you're paying for the police and the schools and everything else, right? If you want to say, normally there's a separate tranche of property taxes for schools themselves. There's a school levy, right? Yes. So if you want to say seniors shouldn't have to pay that because they don't have kids in public school, okay, I would agree with that.
I shouldn't have to pay that either. Well, I don't have kids in public school.
Right, but I mean, then we just keep getting back and back to libertarianism where it's like you should pay.
Just pay for the thing you're using.
Pay for the thing you're using.
Which like would be good, service. Which by the way, I'm in favor of. Because when you pay for the thing you're using, it's more efficient.
Yes.
Because you exercise, you keep... closer, is more accountability. You know what it costs and what you're willing to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And services that draw the revenue from the people using it make the most sense.
Right. Right now, public education is the client is the teachers, the administrators, and maybe we'll think about the parents and the children later, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, under school choice, it would be any other business and people would get the kind of education. Yeah, they'd have more choice. It would be more efficient. People would care more. If we want to approach that system by saying seniors shouldn't have to pay property taxes for schools, I'm okay with that. But this is just generally an argument that if you own a home and are old, you shouldn't have to pay taxes, even though you use the police, you drive on the roads, you go to the park. You probably go to the park more because we're stuck in this coal mine all day.
Right.
You got nothing to do. You're probably
working man got me down as I'm putting my pickaxe in the take mines.
You know, I went to has nothing to do with anything, but I went to a coal mining museum over the weekend. And it was a fascinating experience because the basement of the museum was kind of like, you know, like a coal mining exhibit. You actually crawled in and could kind of like see some of the machinery and stuff that they use. And that was really cool. But then they clearly just like didn't have enough stuff to fill the rest of the coal mining museum. And so it was just like a bunch of like mannequins like getting married, being like, oh, well, coal miners got married. It made no sense, but.
It sounds like awful work. Mines are cool.
Yeah.
Mines are just cool from a literature and video games.
Delving
and
into
fantasy.
The deep.
With the untold riches waiting for you.
But also horrors that you might uncover. Yeah.
Right, that primordial ooze might sneak into this universe if you dig down too deep.
Right. Yeah, there's, it's kind of like the sea
You'll
as well.
You'll find the
there's...
things that the ancients wanted buried.
Yes, that you are kind of, it's the rebellion against God and nature in a way, to delve into the deeps looking for riches, right? They dug too deep and too greedily.
Right. God sent us on this earth.
Yeah.
And here we are, opening doors we're not supposed to open, looking in spots we're not supposed to look.
Right. And at the same time, it's just like it's grueling work. And yet, nevertheless, like you just look at anything around you, what you're touching, it's almost all going to be stuff mined from the ground.
Yeah. We're getting at the Mines of Moria is such an iconic and great location in the Lord
I think
of
that's
the Rings.
My favorite sequence in The Fellowship is going through Moria.
It's great.
And they're like they're lost. And so they're trying to like tell by like, the smell and the
it's a horror
air.
Movie.
Yeah,
the horror is building, the dread is building,
and then you have the drums and the repeated slogan of like, we can't get out,
we can't get out.
Yeah, so
they
good.
Are coming.
So good, so
it
good.
Is so good.
Yeah,
I love mining video game episodes or episodes levels, like in I'm thinking of like Donkey Kong Country as the minecart levels, and it's good stuff.
Good stuff.
I like
good
mine.
Stuff. More mind fiction.
More mind fiction. We want it. I have some dwarves in the fiction I've been working on. Because it's in like a frozen northern kingdom type place, and the background is this long running war. So I was thinking more about, and one side is more technologically advanced. They're more in the mountains. They're making alliances with the dwarves, but the dwarves, they have their own. They don't want to be involved in this war at all. They don't like any of these humans, taking their stuff. and like how that would all shake out. And
that's good stuff. Okay, that's exciting. Good stuff. All right, yeah, I'll have to read it.
Good on the minds. I don't know why we got on that tangent.
Back to Nancy Mace.
Nancy Mace.
Yeah, it's the boomer luxury communism.
But so
that's
the
Russ Green idea. Yeah.
The boomers vote.
Yep.
And so they're going to take everything.
Yeah.
They're just going to get everything.
Yeah.
We make, take.
Did you see the meme on Twitter where it was like, new social contract for Nick, age 30. And it's like 2% mortgage, government-issued goth girlfriend, mandatory boomer tribute.
Oh, right, with the directional arrow to the old couple and the cruise line.
200,000 laptop jobs. Like, if only. It's redistribution from young to old, right? Yeah. Normally, if you're going to support redistribution at all, it should generally be from rich to poor.
Right.
And instead, we're just doing it from young who are generally...
I read an interesting article in Current Affairs, which I generally think makes, they do a good job of making semi-intelligent cases for left ideas. They make the most persuasive cases you can possibly find for left ideas, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. And so they were pushing back on this idea, saying that it's about wealthy people. It's not about the elderly.
Yeah.
Trying to take that on. I mean, and they were conceding, while it is literally true that the elderly are the ones using the services.
Yeah.
But to us, that's what matters.
Right.
I don't think wealthy people should pay less in taxes than anyone else.
Yeah.
And in fact, they don't. They pay huge taxes.
Right.
If we're like making their taxes nothing, we should make everybody else's taxes nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've made this argument many times in print, but for our illiterate viewers, I'll make it here too.
For those who can't read good. Yeah,
you can't have a tax revolt without a spending revolt, right?
Right.
Like maybe if every government, every level of government in the country was running some gigantic budget surplus, then you could, right? But none of them are, right? They're all massively over-leveraged. And so if you're just going to... You're either just shifting the tax burden from one person to another person, and oftentimes doing it in a very unfair way, just to favor some political group, or you're just like doubling down on debt and deficits, right? Which is what happens at the federal level. And all of that is bad. I don't like taxes. I hate taxes. If you hate taxes, you should join us and get rid of the spending.
We will get rid of all your taxes and all your spending.
Zero.
We will zero that shit out.
Yeah. If you're committed to the spending and just want someone else to pay for it, that's a bad attitude. That's a bad attitude.
And what we're landing on as a country because of these boomers, is that the only people who should pay taxes are like young people with incomes that are significant because they're trying to like buy a house and start a family.
Yeah.
Then you wonder why there's a fertility crisis.
Yeah. So there's this is the two-party tax policy right now.
Yeah.
It's the Republican tax policy, as evidenced by these property tax revolts, is young working class people, instead of saving, they should just be shoveling their money to older people to pay for the services they consume.
Right.
And then the Democratic tax policy now is that the one billionaire who still smokes cigarettes should pay for the entire government. That's basically where we're at right now.
Fingers crossed he won't leave our state. The whole revenue for the whole state is fucked if he just moves to Florida. Yeah, these are not serious parties.
No.
That's not good.
And they're not fun parties.
No. Well, I'm having fun. We're having fun.
Yeah, we enjoy it. Watching the decline of our nation.
Let's go into the mines. Let's retreat from society. We will go down there with glittering things.
This is the other promise of the mines. We talked about the downsides, but the warm embrace of Mother Earth sheltering us from the disaster up on the surface, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
You ever read Seven Eves, Neal Stephenson?
No.
Okay. Well, some people go into the mines and save themselves from destruction. So
I've really for Neal Stephenson, I've really only gotten through Snow Crash.
Okay. I mean, that's where I recommend.
I wanted to read the quintessential one.
Yeah.
So, it was very good. I liked it.
It is. I tell you, so that's like an early cyberpunk novel, right? And one of the canonical cyberpunk novels. Has any sci-fi future aesthetic better predicted what the future would actually be like than cyberpunk?
It was
pretty
good.
I was just thinking about this because I was reading some summaries of the new papal encyclical on AI
Let's talk about that.
Okay, yeah,
I
yeah,
have
sure.
things to share about it.
Oh,
go
okay,
ahead.
Great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, just the first thing that struck me is, you know, like the Catholic Church just like pronouncing on like our new robot overlords and like not to give them too much power over our own lives and the economy is just like such a cyberpunk thing to
For
happen
sure.
beyond, you know, what we might say about the substance of it. Or just, I don't know. Like, I was thinking about that a lot. Like, we talked about it last time, but like the squatter story I did, where it's like a man with a samurai sword.
He has a sword in a snow crash.
Exactly,
yes.
Exactly. Yes. It's like we are, in fact, just living in a cyberpunk dystopia.
Yeah.
So,
I was prepared to, and I said this on Free Media when I talked about it with Amber, I was prepared to really hate the encyclical because I'm used to kind of bad economic policy guidance from. Particularly Pope Francis on like environmental stuff, you know, they're bunch of Marxists. I did not think it was bad at all. I thought it was well researched and thought out, and was not at no point did it say we are condemning this technology. We want nothing to do with it. It was saying very common sense things about. I thought it was perfectly fine.
Yeah, and I think sometimes
there were parts I disagreed with, but
yes,
it was overall
sure.
fine.
You know, as a Catholic, you're always on, you know, shaky ground when you're criticizing the Pope.
Yeah.
But I mean, the church is not opposed to markets and capitalism per se, but sometimes I think it gives them short shrift when thinking about like, you know, accomplishing the common good, right?
Yeah.
And there was a little bit of that in this too. But
For
I mean,
sure.
a lot of it too, I feel like people are just so primed to read like pronouncements like this as policy advice when it's just like Pope advice to like, you should be a good person, right? So it's like build AI platforms that like encourage the truth, right? It's like that he's not necessarily saying they're going to pass a law saying lies are banned, right? It's just that if you're an AI engineer, the Pope is giving you some moral advice to like make a, you know, a truthful, that seems like it's a pretty reasonable thing for the Pope to say, right?
Yeah, the part on technology and warfare I found really interesting, and that's where I was most going, okay, because they're talking a lot about the capacity for AI and tech developments to make warfare and violence more lethal.
Yeah.
Frankly, I mean, nobody likes hearing this, but all this tech, like, reduces the number of unnecessary casualties in conflict. Like, the most... It's awful war is when you just send in people with sharpened spears and swords, as the church did for hundreds of years. Go kill him, the non-believer, where everyone dies, everyone in the army dies, the women and children get raped and enslaved, the whole village burns.
Yeah.
You don't need fancy technology to do that. You need literally just sharpened sticks.
Yeah.
Which is what happens every time Africa, some country there, has like a little civil war.
Yeah.
Everyone, massive casualty, you know, horrors beyond... unspeakable levels of horror.
Yeah.
There's more precision. Nobody likes to hear that, but it's
true. No, I understand what you're saying, and I think that can be true, but oftentimes, you know, technology can also make conflict much deadlier. I mean, World War One, World War Two, right? It's like, okay, we've industrialized slaughter, and that produced massive casualties, right? Now, drone warfare and better armor and medical technology, like, maybe that's actually reducing casualties, sure, right? It's robots fighting robots with some humans mixed in, right?
If you send in an standing armies, troops, just have a huge, huge higher percentage of casualties in general and of what we would term non-combatants.
Yeah, yeah.
The part of the encyclical I really liked, and I thought actually the Pope is the right person to weigh in on this question, was about the technology itself being machine and not human. I actually, I have it here. I saved it.
Excellent.
I liked it. I'll read
great.
The part I liked. These systems... Oh, it is important. We must avoid the misconception of equating this type of intelligence with that of human beings. These systems merely imitate certain functions of human intelligence. They may surpass human intelligence in speed and computational capacity. Yet they do not, this so-called artificial intelligences do not undergo experiences, do not possess a body, do not feel joy or pain, do not mature through relationships, and do not know from within what love, work, friendship, or responsibility mean, nor do they have a moral conscience since they do not judge good and evil, grasp the ultimate meaning of situations, or bear responsibility for consequences. They may imitate language, but they do not understand what they produce.
I mean, I find that
extremely well put.
Yes.
And important for people to grasp.
Yes.
Because we hear, you know, the people who say they're experiencing delusions relating to AI and it's That's trickery.
Yeah.
That's just trickery. It does not have a soul.
Yeah.
It has no agency. Yeah. And thus it doesn't have rights and is not responsible for its actions.
Right.
If there's a responsibility to assign, it's in who programs it or how the person uses it. It's itself is not alive.
Mm-hmm.
We loved Westworld and Terminator and things and C-3PO and so many great, you know, conscious robot things through fiction. That is just that, fiction.
Yeah.
This is not that, no matter how much it seems exactly like C-3PO or whatever. It's not alive.
Right.
Doesn't have a soul.
Right. There's no body and soul there. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. And the Pope is the expert on that. And I was glad to hear him say that.
He it was very beautifully put. He has another good line in there where it's just kind of like, you know, praising human frailty as something that's like special and good about us, right? Where it's like an algorithm would see it as an error to be corrected, right? Mm. Whereas our own flaws, you know, can lead us to, you know, salvation and transcendence, right? I thought that was very beautifully put too. Yeah, it was interesting watching, you know who Dean Ball is?
I think
he wrote the Trump administration's was a Office of Science and Technology Policy. Now he's back at, I think, FAI, right? But one of these like right tech guys.
Oh, yeah.
He was having a massive crash out about this, about how like the Pope, you know, thinks that there's like some inherent human dignity that AI like can't replicate. And, you know, how this is a flawed view of AI. I'm like, I'm sorry that like he didn't just abandon all Christianity. I'm sorry the Pope didn't do that for you. Yeah,
right.
So.
And these people are so proud of the thing they created, and they should be.
Yeah.
But they did not create life.
No.
It's just different.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like they think that they've created a, like, I mean, this is why I think, like, the language in there about, you know, building a Tower of Babel or whatever else is, like, so spot on. It's like, clearly these people think that they kind of are building a new god,
right? Or at least they talk that way because, again, they're marketers, they're hype man, they're salesmen.
Right.
They're trying to sell a product, and so they're overhyping how great it is.
And also maybe overhyping some of the downsides too, right? I mean, that's a good way to get people to invest in you if you're like, you're not going to be
doing a commercial.
Yeah, you're not going to be earning any income, so buy some capital instead, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're pro these technologies.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
I align with the tech people on the regulations they want pretty much down the line, but they are capable of being a little annoying sometimes when they describe these things. Because they describe everything like this, positive or negative.
Right.
Like, oh, we've ended society with the thing we just invented. They're talking about the like button.
Right, yeah.
Like, come on, guys.
Right. Or we've revolutionized human connectivity.
Right.
Like button. Yeah. The poke.
Yeah. Yeah, come on. It's not alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can't trick me into thinking it is.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have the spirit of man.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not made in God's image.
Yeah.
So, all right. That was pretty heavy. That was pretty
good
deep stuff.
Oh,
it had
good
a literal papal encyclical quote on here.
I have a couple more. Actually, I have more cave and passage related things to discuss. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, we already did mines. Okay.
We're just, this is an underground.
Okay, we did mines, and now caves.
Mines.
Yeah.
Oh, ooh, I like that. Mind the mines. What's yours is mine.
Oh, boy.
Mine is yours.
All right, let's move on.
Yeah. I completed, so I've been replaying a Legend of Zelda game, the most recent major Legend of Zelda game, Tears of the Kingdom, the one for Switch 2, came out 5 years ago or something. I'd played through it and did everything in it and set it down for years and just did it again for fun. And one of the things I didn't do, there's so much you can do. It's the open world Zelda game. Mm-hmm. I actually don't like it as much as any other Zelda game, but whatever. It's the newest one. One of the things you can do that I didn't do last time, there's caves. You know, it's giant, sprawling open world. So huge.
Mm-hmm.
But there's all these caves in it. There's like 100 of them. Mm-hmm. And you got to kill this frog in each cave, and then you get the little frog orb or whatever it is.
Okay.
And there's this character who wants to transform himself into like a, it's like a blue rabbit. It's like a Miyazaki thing.
Okay.
I don't know. It's like a Spirited Away creature.
Yeah.
But he needs you to get all the little frog orbs and all the 100 caves.
Yeah.
Like after I didn't know how many I had left, but I was like, okay, I've got to be getting pretty close. I'm like, oh, you still have 72 left. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
A lot of caves in this thing. And eventually you just can't find the rest of them. Like the entrances to them are very obscure. This world is so large in this video game.
Uh-huh.
So I waited till I really just couldn't find them anymore. Then I looked at the map online. But even that's hard because that's just, it's 100 little bulletins on a giant map.
Yeah.
And like you're comparing your map to his map. Oh, there's one. Okay, I don't have that one. And finally, I'm like, I'm just looking at it. My eyes are hurting. I'm like, I think I'm comparing my map to that map. I'm like, I think I have them all. Like, where is this thing? Apparently, there's a sky area, and I didn't think there were any caves in the sky area, but apparently,
sky cave.
In the first, right, there's a sky cave in the first area you started. Before you know, you have to kill all these stupid frogs. So I finally did it. And then I give the character all the frog orbs. He does his little transformation. And that's that.
It's over.
And I'm like, what? It was very unsatisfying. Like,
you
what
fought.
Is the, why do you play video games? You know, what is the, it's like I was doing work to complete this. Just to do something?
I don't know. Is it a sense of adventure? A desire to complete tasks? You know?
At some point it just became so monotonous though. And I was just doing it to say I did it.
You wanted completion.
Right.
Yeah.
Why don't I feel this way about like work?
Right.
I would be a better employee. Right. If I felt relentlessly driven to complete tasks.
Dude, it's like when you hear people who are like, oh, you know, I was depressed after a breakup or whatever, so I couldn't eat and I just threw myself into my work. I'm like, damn, why can't I get the good depression? Why can't you get that, right? I don't know. I can't explain your odd fixation with Zelda caves, other than just like the urge
caves.
To go into
the caves
deep.
Are cool. Yeah. The caves are cool, and there's some.
Okay, if it was like plucking fruit from trees, you think you would have been as invested in it?
Right, you get tired doing that. You mean in real life?
No, in the game. I mean, like in the game. I'm wondering if like the actual
like
form
that
of the
because,
cave.
Because I mean, you go into the cave. There's always like some glowy mushrooms you can collect too, and they're like little maze passageways. And I don't know.
So you're dissatisfied with the amount of time you spent on this.
But I'm not blaming the game for it being on. Like
you're blaming yourself.
It didn't say I had to do all that. You can do that without. You can beat the game without doing that. Once I was done, I was like, okay, I am now done with this game.
Yeah.
Set it aside. I will probably never play it again.
Yeah.
Done with it now. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, it feels bad to leave something incomplete.
Yes.
Right?
I'm a completionist in video games. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to not do the main quest. I don't want to finish the main quest until I've collected all the optional things. Mm-hmm. I'm a side quest guy. Mm-hmm. I want to do all the side quests, or as many of them as I can before I progress the main. Yeah. I want to have all the things before I go in to fight the big bad guy.
You know, I think I am this way as well, but it's also frustrating to me, and that's why I don't play RPGs. Yeah. I like games that don't really have victory conditions, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, in some ways, this is like the most pointless of all games, but like, you ever play any like city building games, right?
Yeah.
It's just like you play until you lose, right?
Right.
Because eventually your system is going to collapse.
Yeah, I don't
like
games like that.
It's fun because, I mean, I like the growth. I like, you know, cities. I like, you know, laying things out and planning things and doing math to like make sure I'm using my resources.
We know how autistic you are. Thank you. Yes.
But it is unsatisfying. I mean, sometimes you do like challenges that have a victory condition, but more often than not, it's just like, how long can I keep this thing going? Mm. Yeah, my favorite game in this respect is a Surviving Mars. Maybe some of the viewers have played it, but eventually, you know, you're going to run out of, you know, the polymers, and then your, you know, the oxygen, you know, thing's not going to work and everyone suffocates. And I feel a little bad about that, particularly, you know, with AI, now that they're like thinking people, that I'm suffocating. I feel bad now.
The only game of this kind that I ever really liked is an old and obscure computer game that was called Conquest of the New World that I used to play with my buddy Tori in like grade school and high school. And we played it subsequently. It's all very old computer game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like a civilization game.
Is it turn-based?
Yes, turn-based civilization game.
On a map?
Yes, and the cool thing is, though, you start with a, like, discovery phase.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a randomly generated map, like a seed. You know, you can tell how big you want it to be, how much rivers and islands and forests you want versus how, you know. And then it randomly generates it, and then you can't see it. So you're just on a blank space, and you've got your little explorers, and you send them, and they're discovering the map.
And then at
some point you decide, so, oh, I found some rivers and forests here. This would be a nice place for a colony. Mm-hmm. And then you start a colony, and then you start your civilization.
Okay, this is very civilization-like.
Very civilization. And then there's a phase where you, so then you're discovering the other player. So me and my buddy would play, and there'd be like three computer players. Mm-hmm. And actually someone represents the natives.
Hmm.
Because the natives have like a less developed, but they can get, there's different advantages the natives have. But then eventually you have to declare independence from your mother country.
The metropole.
And they send a ship to come kill you.
Oh, cool.
So then you have to fight off the mother country.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And if you declare independence too quickly, they will just beat you and recolonize you.
That's awesome.
But then eventually you're supposed to go to war with the other colonies.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do it at any time, but you might just lose. But the game was not as poorly designed computer game.
Yeah.
It would freeze when we get to this stage where we were actually in giant, there was too many sprites on the screen or something. Mm. But we had a lot of fun with that one.
Yeah.
Conquest of the New World. If anybody watching has ever played that, hit me up in the comments. I would love to hear your experience.
I bet it's something you could probably torrent and
tried.
Yeah.
We were able to do it, but there were a lot of difficulties. Mm. We were able to do it on a couple different laptops I had in the past, it was a fun one.
Okay.
Fun one.
It sounds great. Yeah. I played a lot of Civilizations, a lot of Age of Empires, a lot of the Total War series. It's all good stuff. And also Anno. That's the city building series. That's really good.
Mm.
City Skylines I played before, but the learning curve is so steep for that game, right? And it's so much of it is just designing your road network and whatever. And it's that's a little too much for me.
I really liked, for a while I was playing, while I was on the Metro or something, literally the Metro game. There's a game that someone made that was... there's an app for it on my phone or something where you design your own DC Metro.
Huh.
And you start with two lines. It gives you locations
where
these people want to get to this location. And so you'd make a line to connect it.
Okay.
And then you have to decide, which stations it should go through to effectively go. It was
I kind of like that. Yeah.
And eventually it collapses. You have too many people waiting
and
you die.
Like the real Metro. Yeah.
It was a really fun one.
If you could add a Metro line anywhere in the DC area, where would you put it?
Georgetown. We got to get something to Georgetown, right?
So Randy Clark has proposed ahead of WMATA, which is our.
I had my answer to that real fast. Go ahead.
He has proposed doing a bus rapid transit from. From H Street Union Station to Georgetown
bus.
Yeah, but
I'll just take a flying car or a Segway or I'll ride a horse through a drive-in movie. What are you talking about?
It's BRT, so it's half bus, half train. You know, it's the cat dog of public transit. So it's got a dedicated lane, dedicated station-like stops. Because Georgetown, there's this kind of myth that doesn't have a metro stop because the rich people wanted to keep the poors out of Georgetown, but it's really just bad geology for it, right? You'd have to go really deep.
To do a lot of mining.
Got to do a lot of mining, and who knows? Yeah, and then we're gonna
who knows what horrors
your insatiable demand for a Georgetown station releases the Balrog that destroys
the
entire city.
You thought about whether you could, but you didn't think about whether you should.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, you shouldn't. Ride the fucking bus.
We could have an above-ground metro like they do at New York. Sometimes the subway goes.
Yeah,
but nobody would want to ruin the Georgetown
aesthetic
view or whatever.
Right, yeah, that would probably be.
They do have that highway up there.
There's elevated parts of the DC metro.
Or there's elevated parts of the road near Georgetown.
Sure, right, yeah, that's true.
So, I don't know.
I mean, it would just be gigantically, massively expensive. I know. I mean, all of this is just kind of.
Yeah.
Pie in the sky. Now, what I would like is somewhere from Brooklyn Catholic University area over to Columbia Heights, Northwest, right? We need another east-west line. Yeah.
Sure.
That's what I would like. The other giant infrastructure project that I would like that is completely infeasible or would just cost way too much money.
Zeppelins.
No, Zeppelins. Permanent Zeppelins.
Yeah, Zeppelins everywhere.
Stalking the skies.
Yes.
No, not that. But bury the... roads going through the National Mall, right? We have this beautiful pedestrian mall that is then intersected by many busy roads.
I mean,
of traffic.
It's intersected a couple times. It's not every single one.
It should be one long pedestrian walkway.
It's pretty long.
It's 3 miles, right?
That's a low priority change for me. It's not that...
I know it's low priority. There's other things we could spend our money on. This would cost a gigantic amount of money, but that's what I would like to see happening. So if anyone who can make the dollars flow is listening, that's what I would like.
My other cave related subject, it's not really a cave thing.
Nick Cave. Yeah.
Oh, let's talk about Nick Cage.
Okay. Wait, what happened?
Cody wanted us to talk about that. I don't remember why. Good actor.
Okay.
I like him.
Yeah.
He did an interview in the New York Times. He has some new, that's... Adaptation is one of my favorite movies.
I've never seen it.
It's a Charlie Kaufman film. You don't watch any of the Charlie Kaufman?
I've heard really good. It's Synecdoche. That's another one he did.
Synecdoche,
whatever.
Yeah.
Don't correct me on air.
It's a great movie.
I've heard really
it's
good things
so
about it.
You would love it. Yeah. It's dense. You have to watch it multiple times to see all the weird things in it. Because I think most people know the premise is that... maybe they don't even know what the premise is. It's Philip Seymour Hoffman's greatest role. He's playing a director who wins a theater director who wins a genius grant to put on the production of a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And he wants to say something profound about the human condition. And he does it in this giant, giant, giant warehouse that is like within a warehouse, within a warehouse. But the movie is absurdist.
Yeah.
Like then time passes in a way that is not real.
Mm-hmm.
Things are happening that aren't really happening. There's all these doubles in the movie, like because he hires someone to play himself,
mm-hmm.
and then that person's like, well, shouldn't you hire someone to play me as well? So then every character has like three people who are that character, who are acting out.
Mm-hmm.
There's like an important maid character that doesn't really exist. It's a weird movie. And then in the end, everyone's dead and it doesn't explain why. Like some calamity.
Spoilers.
It doesn't really spoil it. Like there's some calamity has happened.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Some post-apocalyptic event that is not explained.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a good, good movie. Oh, but there's all sorts of little like the background you'll see like there's a clock because it had time stuff. So there's like a clock drawn on the wall that's like not moving. And there's all things about twos and threes. Like the third of everything is missing. Great movie.
Okay.
Great, great movie.
Sounds strange and up my alley.
A strange movie that I am interested in seeing right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Capes thing. Backrooms. Do you know about this?
Mm-mm. What's up?
It's a horror movie that's coming out. It just came out. I'm not a big horror movie guy, particularly. You are.
No, I wouldn't say I'm a big horror fan. I do like horror injected into as like a spice. Into other types of genres, right?
And just in your daily life.
In my daily life,
when I vomit blood on you spontaneously, mm-hmm. you really get a kick out of it.
Yeah, I like to think maybe it's supernatural, maybe it's a medical thing.
This movie, it's called Backrooms, and I don't go for a lot of horror either, but I do love found footage concept movie things.
Interesting. Yeah.
I love found footage stuff. Yeah. I love Cloverfield.
Yeah,
Chronicle. Mm-hmm. I love those movies.
Mm-hmm.
This is made about a
Cannibal Holocaust. You ever see that?
No.
Okay, it was an Italian movie, so graphic that they arrested the director for murder, and he had to like produce the actors to be like, no, it was a movie.
What's the one the Days of Gomorrah or whatever Italian film.
Oh, yeah,
the grossest
really,
movie of all time.
Yeah.
Where they're like eating.
Yeah. It's poop. And it's also like it's like a homosexual, sadomasochistic. It's just all the
bad things.
Yeah, all
God,
the bad
that's
stuff.
So bad. It's probably James Tallarico's favorite movie.
Yeah. Well, I remember Dave Weigel got himself in trouble on Twitter for like reposting a screenshot of it. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did some girl rat him out for that? Some woman?
I do remember, I don't know if this is too inside baseball, but I do remember
some nagging.
Because he used to work at Reason, right?
Yeah.
And he still, you know, there was like some listing of him on the website. So we just got like crazy people calling us being like, why does Reason support rape? Because Dave Weigel tweeted a screenshot of this horrible Italian movie.
Mm.
And I said, I don't know. But anyway, okay, finish. Backrooms.
Backrooms.
Yeah.
So it's based on a web series,
mm-hmm.
Just like an amateur movie maker put on YouTube where it's like it's found footage horror.
Uh-huh.
The premise is it's like abandoned malls or like back storage facility. Like there's this, it's a room that goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
That you keep exploring.
Uh-huh.
That becomes more like, oh my God, there's another hallway.
Yeah.
Like with fluorescent lighting.
Uh-huh.
And wallpaper, and it gets weirder and weirder. And then you're lost in it, and then there's some monster in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was, like, that was the first one, or he accidentally steps into it in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
He falls through a crack in the sidewalk, and he's like, where am I? And then there's a mm-hmm. monster that attacks him, and it ends.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the subsequent videos, it's almost as if there's some, like, evil corporation that was trying to solve the world's storage spaces by creating some space that just keeps growing,
huh.
and they like lost control of it or something, and
okay.
it's and you're accidentally entering this dimension that has like these almost like wiry, like chair-like monsters, because they're it's like the room is alive.
Yeah. Okay. I kind of love this.
Doesn't that sound cool?
This just came out.
So that's the web series, and they've turned it into a movie.
Oh, okay.
And it's got. Oh, he's so good. Oh, you like Children of Men?
Yeah.
The black guy who's the villain, sure, yeah. The leader of the rebel. He's such a good actor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If he was playing Helen of Troy, no one would complain. He's such a good actor. He's the main character in it.
Okay.
It looks cool. I never go see horror movies, but maybe when it comes out,
we could go together.
Oh, that'd be nice.
A little freed up outing.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, cool. All right. We will. And we'll talk about it again on this very show. Yeah.
So I'm excited. It looks cool.
Okay, yeah.
So I was watching some of that, the web series on YouTube. It was pretty good. It was scary.
Okay.
Horrifying.
Yeah.
I love room stuff, like in horror, like a haunted space, or like an evil space that's alive.
Yeah, they're kind
that's a good concept. Yeah, they're
like caves, but on the surface. Yeah.
Well, yeah, the eldritch horror is escaping.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's like I think that's kind of a necessary component of horror, is the environment itself entombing you with your nightmares.
But when
right?
it's the environment itself that's bad, it's not even that it's Dracula in the castle. It's the castle itself is out to get you.
Yeah.
There's a great Stephen King short story that they turned into a movie about room whatever in a hotel. And the room is evil.
Yeah.
It's not an evil spirit in it. The room itself is the evil spirit.
Oh, okay. So I get these two confused because there was two... Like I think they were both on HBO too, shows about like a kind of mystical hotel room, right? And one of them is more horror, and one of them is just kind of like psychedelic. Mm. And I think I watched the psychedelic one, not the horror one.
I don't remember.
But, yeah,
know what these are.
Bad
rooms.
Yeah, bad room. What's she gonna do
when you're in the room?
Okay, do we have any other
We got
politics?
Other stuff. We got plenty other stuff.
More caves. Let's take a deep dive in the caves.
You know, let's stay on this a little bit. Let's really explore techno futurism as an aesthetic. I'm going to an event today that
I go to the AF Gala?
Yeah. That I just found out has a techno futurism theme.
What exactly?
What do I wear for a techno futurism theme?
Yeah, is that
I mean you're supposed to wear a suit.
Wait, it was retrofuturism, right?
Oh, it's retrofuturism.
So you'd have to like...
I wrote down technofuturism.
Mm, well, see, that was your mistake, yeah.
Retrofuturism.
Yeah, so I guess you just kind of get like Jetsons up your
How
your
do you Jetsons
aesthetic.
Up your aesthetic?
Get some like...
Shoulder pads?
Yeah, some like shoulder ridges, maybe. You could have like antennas. I'm not a fashion guy.
Okay.
Neither
am I.
Could you have
said that in a very pointed way.
Could you wear like some sort of like sparkling jacket, you know?
No.
You know, like silver, you know, space fabric jackets.
Okay.
You got something like that?
I just brought a normal suit.
Damn. So are you gonna go?
Oh yeah, I'm going.
Okay.
But I'm trying to is there a store nearby I can go get something?
A retrofuturism store?
Yeah. I don't know. Wouldn't it be funny if that was the store that managed to remain open
on this depressing block?
We're in an area of DC where nothing can stay open because there's just constant construction and no one comes in for lunch anymore. It just into the city in general, so all the restaurants go out of business.
What about the Futurism Society up the road?
That's the place to go.
The microscope store. Yeah.
There was a fake microscope store. Yeah, I think it's an event space.
But for a futurist society.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so maybe they would have some clothes you could borrow.
Maybe, but I haven't asked them yet. It's the future or something like that. I don't know.
This is big.
I don't like retrofuturism, honestly, as an aesthetic.
Well, it didn't win, right?
Yeah.
Like
Jetsons. Oh, like the newest Fantastic Four movie, which was very mid. Was it retrofuturism, and I didn't care for it. It's just not an aesthetic I love.
Yeah, so the thing I would say...
I like cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Or steampunk. I like steampunk.
Steampunk's a little silly.
I love steampunk.
It's too silly. Like, there's
it's
some
so
things
libertarian.
That are cool.
I love it.
How's it libertarian?
Just because libertarians dress like they're in steampunk. Monocles and vests and...
Gauntlets and...
Yes!
Yeah. Your steampunk vape.
Oh, I love it.
No.
And you're riding in a ship with necessary propellers.
Yeah, right.
God, I love it.
Yeah, a big airship.
Yes!
No,
Zeppelins!
No more Zeppelins.
No more Zeppelins, no more caves. What can I have?
Right? Everything has to be surface level, right? We said that this podcast was not going to get too deep.
Okay.
Okay, so the thing I like about retrofuturism is it does kind of present a kind of optimistic forward looking vision of the future, right?
Utopian.
Yeah, everything's going to be bright and shiny and silver, and that's good, right?
Right.
The downside is, why do people hate it? Is because it's not very human, right? There's no wood paneled pub that makes you feel comfortable, right? You know,
you live in a giant glass fishbowl, and you press the toast button, and then the toast comes out. I guess we have
already,
that.
Yeah.
I guess we do have. It's
just
that
you're just describing a toaster.
Yeah.
Oh, all these gadgets and gizmos, but yeah. So
we
I don't
fight
know.
In my household over how burnt the toast should be.
Mm-hmm.
He wants very lightly toasted toast.
Mm-hmm.
And I want that toast fucking black.
Wow.
Black burnt toast.
Damn.
I like things burnt.
Okay.
I like my bacon really burnt.
Uh-huh. I don't... Yeah, I think I'm going to have to side with your significant other on this one.
All right.
I like a toast, you know, that's just toasted enough to hold the butter, you know, that it doesn't, you know, it's not flopping around.
I want the butter to start melting immediately because it's come into contact with such a warm surface.
Yeah.
A little bit of melting.
Well, just put the butter in the toaster, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Are we allowed to do that in under a retro futurist dystopia?
Yeah. Butter is probably a little too human for a retro future.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, cyberpunk's about where it's at.
Cyberpunk's
I mean, it's just normal aesthetics. We live in a cyberpunk,
we live in a
world,
cyberpunk
now.
World. Yeah. I do actually have another political topic.
Okay.
For us.
Yeah.
Jill Biden.
Oh, Dr. Biden.
Dr. Jill Biden had an interview. She's previewing some book she's
cynical.
Coming up with,
yeah.
Where she was asked about Joe Biden's debate, famous debate, and she said that she was horrified. And she was worried he'd had a stroke.
Curious.
Which is curious because at the time she said it was the greatest, most specialist debate performance ever.
Huh.
So interesting. Also, she said, and this is what people missed. She said she'd never seen him like that up until then. And
never seen him since.
Has never seen him like that since.
It was a freak accident.
So what she's actually doing is revisionist history. To try to say that Joe Biden's fine and could have been candidate
fine.
And
yeah.
would have been a great mm-hmm. president because that was a one-off thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she's doing.
Yeah,
her and Hunter Biden are on this Biden revenge tour where they're like, nope, Joe Biden was great.
There's nothing wrong.
There was nothing wrong with him. He was betrayed by Democratic elites.
Yeah.
And who Hunter announced that that's the Epstein class. And he said
this
that.
Guy.
I
yeah.
know.
This
These
guy.
People...
That's why I was blowing out my mouth the way that I did, because it's just so transparently cynical and ridiculous.
Stay with Joe, and they can privately tell him that because they love the guy.
Yeah.
But if you're going to come on TV and try to gaslight me on this, we will call you what you are, which is a liar.
Yeah.
You liar.
Just so ruthless.
I don't want to read your stupid book.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to comment, you know. The Biden's relationships with themselves is what it is. But like, what are you doing to your husband, too? If it's like he's clearly unfit for this task and is melting in front of my eyes and you want him to like be that spotlight in that spotlight, in that position
they
that's
did.
Killing him. That's terrible.
They did. They that's pushed a... him to do it.
Yeah.
They helped make the decision he should do it.
Yeah.
They were they're the Grima Wormtongue duo is Jill Biden and Hunter Biden.
Truly.
They wanted him. They pushed him to go for it.
Truly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not always the case. Some spouses talk their partners out of running for office or running again. Or that's a common reason they decide not to do it is family talks them out of it.
Yeah. Or in other cases, you know, like it's a real you can tell it's a real partnership. Right.
Yeah.
Barack and Michelle. Right.
Yeah.
Trump and Melania.
She didn't
and,
want him to do anything.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge. She's very negative.
You don't
about
like
him.
You don't like Michelle Obama.
I've turned against her. Very
wow.
much. Okay. I don't like how she speaks about Barack, to be perfectly honest.
Wow. But, what did she say?
I feel like she's always maligning him on her own podcast that she does. She's always talking about the toll it took on her, and she didn't bother to show up to Jimmy Carter's funeral with him, and I don't know.
Okay, well,
it's
maybe I was maybe I was praising her too much. I won't make that mistake again.
Trump and Melania are a happy duo.
They're a partnership.
Yeah,
they're a partnership.
Yeah. She famously told him to shut up about running for president and never talk about it again, or just do it already.
Yeah,
and he chose to do it already, and here we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The idea that they don't like each other, or she doesn't like him, or she wants to escape from this is such a liberal
fantasy.
It is not the case at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's in her element. She's in her element.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, she doesn't like care about the
politics,
people, or anything.
No, of course not. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Jill Biden, and yeah, just to lie so cynically is really unbecoming.
Bill and Hillary, there's a partnership.
That is not a partnership.
To make this partisan. That was a partnership.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They have each other's back.
Yeah. George and Barbara, George and Laura, you know,
fine nice marriages. People.
Yeah. It's not very interesting. But.
You know, I will say this about George Bush, a president I did not like at all at the
one
time.
One or two.
W. Bush. Okay, I was too young to form opinions about H.W., but George W. Bush didn't like his presidency.
No.
Very opposed to a lot of things he did. You know, he doesn't do anything now, though, that's offensive. He just...
is kind of like a kindly old man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a nice way to be.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can,
I'm not trying to do revisionist history and say he was some kind of great president.
Even to this day, I mean, we'll see how this Iran stuff works out, but I would say he's the worst president certainly of the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you'd say ever, but.
No, I would not say ever. Definitely not ever.
Lincoln, obviously.
Yeah. Lincoln. No, Wilson. We got Wilson.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. 100%. 100%. Yeah. No, of the 21st century, though.
Yeah. Johnson's pretty bad.
Very bad. Very bad.
Bad domestic policy and Vietnam War.
Johnson, Wilson, FDR. These are the people who kind of created the modern federal government and also were warmongers.
Yeah.
Right? FDR, I think you can give a little bit of a pass on the war stuff.
FDR is less bad on some things.
Terrible domestic
policy.
Policies.
The war stuff. That's
I mean, you're fighting
and
Nazi
he did
Germany.
He did a good job on the war.
Yeah.
So
we won. That's
fine. But Wilson, it's an unnecessary war.
Yeah.
Massive expansion of the state on every level. Cult of personality that he have. Southern racist who wants to resegregate everything.
Yep.
Unnecessary war. Internationalist vision.
Massive restrictions on freedom of speech.
Yeah. Oh, horrible. It took decades to undo for the court to finally recalibrate the violence he did against the First Amendment.
People really...
bad, bad, bad.
People don't grok kind of just how statist policy was during World War One. We nationalized the railroads, the telegraphs, the shipbuilding, like, you know, in an industrial...
For an affair that had nothing to do with us.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Absolutely.
For some European nonsense.
Bullshit, yeah.
That he promised to not get involved in.
Yeah, he ran on a peace platform. Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, it didn't help that the Germans were
they were attacking our boats. They should.
Well, so that was bad. But I actually listened to an interesting podcast about this where it was like the Germans thought like it was actually like a good thing if they blew up some passenger liners with a bunch of innocent civilians on it, because then that would discourage people from traveling on the open seas, and then it would just be like the munitions that were left, which is kind of a miscalculation.
Huge. I mean, they did. Didn't they took out like front page advertisements in the New York Times saying, please, innocent civilians,
don't travel.
Stop boarding these exact passenger lines, which we have every intention of blowing up.
Right. They did in fact do that. And people were like, and then the shipping company was like, you have nothing to worry about. This baby is way faster than any stupid U-boat. You're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not so good. Not so good.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's two reactions to George Bush's retirement is, you know, his kindly old man personas. I think you can either find that like an endearing side of his character that in some way shows humanity behind a very flawed presidency, or you can just find that as like the ultimate like lack of, you know, injustice, where this guy who started an unnecessary war, mm-hmm. brought a huge amount of death and destruction to the world, and is now just kind of like lapping it up, giving candies to Michelle Obama.
Yeah. So, I know. I'm not trying to change anyone's view of him, and my view of his presidency has not changed.
Yeah. I find it charming as well. I want to like George W. Bush, right? But I still would feel obligated to throw a shoe at him if I, you know.
I just appreciate that he's shut up.
Yeah.
And he's not involved in politics.
Yeah, right.
And people not being involved in politics is endearing.
Yeah.
Because politics is awful.
It's,
and you know, this will never, ever, 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 ever be the case with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He will never receive quietly into the night until he has passed away from old age.
Right. That's very true.
But
will be interesting how much his influence, does he retain it or does it fade once he's out of office?
I no longer think his influence will ever fade until he literally does not exist anymore.
Yeah.
Why would it fade? It has not faded over time. It's gotten more, it's gotten tighter. It's gotten more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
He has more influence over the Republican Party.
Yeah, right.
Not over the entire country. There's lots of people who don't like him. They could lose the next election. They could get killed at the midterms. But his control over the Republican Party is so absolute. It actually has no historical precedence within the United States.
You think he's going to continue to play kingmaker too after he's out of office?
I at this point, an object in motion tends to stay in motion. Yeah. I don't know why. I would have to be persuaded.
That's not true.
Well, what do we know? A cave tends to stay underground.
I'm sorry.
A zeppelin. He's a zeppelin.
A zeppelin tends to float.
To stay in the air forever, no matter what. He's just, why would it diminish?
Yeah, that's true.
Losing didn't diminish.
No. That is.
If losing didn't work, I don't know why being out of office would work.
I think it's a pretty dead even heat between Nixon and Trump for like who had the more remarkable political comeback. And I think I would actually have to give it to Trump.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Nixon's political comeback was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But then his own party did successfully force him from office.
Yes.
So there's no in terms of power, you know, over the party.
Right. Yeah.
It's
sure.
It's just no one. Reagan didn't have this. Mm-mm. Obama didn't have this. Mm-mm. You know, those are the two kind of recent examples you can find of politicians who are very popular in their party among their people, but it's just not even, it's nothing like that. There's never been anything like
Okay, so this is kind of a too big of a question to ask at this stage in the podcast, but like what explains his enduring charisma and power?
Great man theory.
Yeah.
He has
a will to power.
A historically unprecedented force of nature. It's a mix of talent, raw talent, luck. He was just born with it. I don't know. He's just amazing at that.
Ross Douthat had a line in one of his columns where it's like, just like improbable events follow him.
Yes.
Right? He has a way of just kind of like scrambling the matrix a little bit. Yeah, I can't quite explain it either. I'm awed by it, even though I find him to be a terrible president and wish he would go away. Right. Yeah.
He has more in common with like Napoleon or something some person who defined his age and a mixture of happenstance but he has sheer raw political talent and he excels like no other at the dominant and most important means of communication of this era, at social media.
Mm-hmm.
He is just a walking, living, breathing meme.
Well, I think this explains.
That's the biggest.
Why he's so, well, he's mastered multiple modes of communications, whether it's cable, social media, whatever, right? I mean, I guess those are the two big ones, but yeah.
He wants this more than you or I could want anything in our lives.
He gets shot in the head and his immediate reaction is to
how to turn this into a memeable moment.
Yes, in which he did amazingly. I mean, with the help of a AP reporter getting like the best possible photo you could ever get from that. But
he takes calls from reporters in the middle of the night. He watches TV at all hours. He's talking to his people. He makes conversation about politics with everyone. From what I understand, if you get invited to one of those Trump dinners, that he's engaging and that that was a funny detail from Nick Fuentes of all people. Remember Nick Fuentes got into that Kanye Trump dinner?
Yeah.
And he's like, Kanye was so awkward the whole dinner, but Trump was like, wanted to talk about, you know, what do you find compelling about, you know, what is your interest in the politics? Like he's just playing the game at all times. And that's what it takes to be the very best at it of anyone who has ever lived. Again, not an endorsement of anything happening, but you have to marvel at a job done this well.
Yeah.
I
agree.
Never happened before, and it's hard to imagine anyone else repeating it.
It's funny, you know, Barack Obama, his initial election was treated as this grand historic event. And then, you know, obviously in some ways it is, first black president, right? But I think in 50 years, 60 years, he's actually going to be kind of a forgotten figure, and Trump will dominate this era, right? Yeah. I mean, people aren't even, Biden is going to be like Rutherford B. Hayes. No one is going to remember his presidency whatsoever.
I mean, I would argue that, I mean, Trump is probably the most important person on earth. Like, I'm probably more people know who he is than on any other living person.
Sure. Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is on a different, this is just on a different level.
It's like that cow in Bangladesh with the, you know, had the hair. They called it Donald Trump.
Right.
Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
Okay, the water buffalo. Yeah, well, I'm just saying that his reach is such that some random Bangladeshi farmer in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, if you did that for Barack Obama, you'd be called racist. You'd be canceled.
It also wouldn't make sense because the cow, I don't know if you saw it, didn't look like Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Although it was always pointing its hoof at people and saying, let me be clear.
Was it wearing a tan suit? Was it a tan cow?
Oh. Talk about a scandal.
Man, that's no good. Well, is tan suit? Actually, I just ordered a tan suit, but I don't think that's retrofuturism, really.
No, it's got to be silver.
Silver. Okay, silver. I got to get something silver. I got 4 hours to paint myself silver like one of those.
The Tin Man. Yeah.
Like the Tin Man. Oh, yeah.
Okay, there you go. Okay. Just goes the Tin Man. Yeah, go get some, I don't know.
I'll go huff some silver paint or whatever.
Oh, okay. Yeah, save some for me.
You're not going to this event.
I don't think I'm gonna go.
We have an extra ticket.
Yeah, I know.
All right, that's no fun.
I'm not in the gala mood. You guys go.
You're not in the mood. Oh, yeah. It was your period.
All right.
Well, we'll drink sometime.
Okay.
We'll go see this movie, maybe.
Yeah, and we'll get a drink afterward. Yeah. And maybe before.
Okay.
Yeah, during one of those theaters.
Oh, yeah, we got to. You remember when people didn't drink? We're just constantly drunk before, during, and after a movie.
Yeah.
Don't you? I love to like belligerently interrupt people and ruin their viewing experience.
It's a lot of fun.
It's so much fun.
Yeah, you make your own movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
See you next week. Thanks for watching.